everybody. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Mike Malloy program. Thanks for joining us. This hour is sponsored by John Starr. John Starr. He sends a message with his sponsorship that says, "Love your show. Thanks for being a voice of sanity on the air." John Starr is this month, this hour's sponsor. Thanks, John. I'm just sitting here watching on Rachel Maddow's program on MSNBC, sound bites from Obama's press conference today, after the announcement that he had totally sold out his own position, the position of all progressive or liberal Democrats. It's amazing stuff. We didn't get any sound cuts to this today because I have the assumption that you probably have heard enough of this. The tax cuts that Obama caved on for the wealthy, his rationalization is, you know, he had to do it for the people on unemployment and the middle class tax cuts and so on and so forth. And this after Boehner himself said back in October that if he were forced, he would have gone along with the tax cuts for people under 200,000, let those continue, and let the ones on the wealthy kick back in. I've never seen a president snatch defeat from the jaws of victory the way this man does, and I'm pretty fed up with it. So I'm not going to talk about him right now. Maybe a little bit later on in the program, we'll get into some of this. It's just too disgusting. I had an invitation to go. What was that thing that I said, no, I don't want to go to in Washington?
Radio Row.
What is that, around the State of the Union address or something? And I turned it down because the people organizing this said, well, you know, we'll have a lot of Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate who will be more than happy to come and sit down and talk. And one of the events is an address by the president. And maybe we could get him to come down Radio Row and talk to some of you people. And I just said, no, I'm not the least bit interested. I get one of these Democrats on the air, I'm going to lose my mind. So, no. In his, this just came in right before the program began. This is called Breaking News, okay? In his latest effort to find common ground with Republicans in Congress, President Barack Obama said this evening that he is willing to agree that he is a Muslim. Differences over his religious orientation have been a sore point between the president and his Republican foes for the past 2 years, but in agreeing that he is a Muslim, Mr. Obama is sending a clear signal that he is trying to find consensus. He told reporters at the White House, quote, "The American people do not want to see us fighting in Washington. They want to see us working together to improve their lives, and Allah willing, we will," end quote. However, Obama's willingness to back down on his claim of being a Christian doesn't seem to have satisfied his Republican opposition, as GOP leader John Boehner today insisted that the president must also agree that he was born in Kenya, or no deal. And while the president did not immediately agree to Boehner's demand, he hinted that yet another compromise might be in the offing. The president said, quote, "My place of birth has been and always will be negotiable," end quote. So White House sources indicate today that the president might be willing to meet the Republicans halfway on his birthplace and say that he was born in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So there you have it. Now, this comes from the Borowitz report, Andy Borowitz. Today is December 7th. On this day, 61 years ago, 69 years ago, my mother told me before she died that it was a Sunday. Word was received that the Japanese military had attacked Pearl Harbor, our outpost in the Pacific. In that attack, 2,400 Americans were killed. most of whom were military personnel. We now commemorate Pearl Harbor Day in this country every year. And I just want to point something out. 5 years later, we killed 250,000 Japanese civilians in the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And, in other words, 100 times as many people were wiped out in the nuclear attack, the unnecessary nuclear attack on the Japanese mainland, as were killed by the Japanese military in the attack on Pearl Harbor. I'm not looking for equivalency here. I'm not trying to make any statement except to point that out. Death and destruction is death and destruction. If there is some sort of judgment subsequent to people dying, then perhaps that judgment will not hesitate in deciding that equivalence does not exist between 2,400 dead in a military attack and 250,000 dead in a gratuitous attack on civilians. All war is poison. All attacks, unprovoked, is poison. All war, provoked or otherwise, is poison. It is one way that we and maybe two or three other species of animal life, distinguish ourselves on this planet. Our willingness to murder endlessly our own species. So, in my little simple way here, I commemorate Pearl Harbor Day. I remember it for the murder that it was. And I commemorate the August 6th and August 9th nuclear attacks 4 years later on Japan as the mass murder that it was. You know, my attitude about war is God damn all nations that commit these acts. So, Elizabeth Edwards is dead. I'm sure you've heard it today. She died after her 6-year battle with breast cancer. She was 61. Her family was with her, including her estranged husband, John. And according to reports, she died peacefully and with her family around her. You know, John Edwards was my second choice after Dennis Kucinich. That seems like a million years ago, doesn't it? Okay. All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, a couple of things that I want to bring up. And at some point tonight, we will open up the phone lines for your comments. So stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Talk about it. Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. In addition to the backpedaling and the backing down and the cowardice and the snatching defeat from the jaws of victory that Barack Obama is becoming famous for, it's become his signature move is to talk tough, and as soon as his opposition in any given situation makes a face at him, he folds. The latest, Obama has abandoned attempts to persuade Israel to slow, not stop, no, that would be way too much, to slow West Bank settlement activity, which is being called a major blow to the resumption of Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. This was one of Obama's, so he said, top foreign policy initiatives. As a matter of fact, what was it, 2 days? Was it 3 days? Two days after Obama was sworn in, he sent seasoned negotiator George Mitchell to the Middle East to be his special envoy. And today, or this evening, Obama said, to hell with it. What's the point? So that is over. According to the Associated Press, after months of trying to broker a formula under which Israel would impose a new temporary settlement freeze in return for United States promises and incentives, you know what that is, all kinds of weaponry, all kinds of state-of-the-art stealth fighters and bombers, all kinds of nuclear weaponry support, that's what we promised. Two American officials have, and they're speaking on condition of anonymity, of course, two American officials said the president has concluded that course won't work, asking the Israelis, no matter how much is thrown into the pot, asking the Israelis to reinstitute a temporary temporary halt to the building of new settlements in the occupied territories. The talks, such as they were, stalled in September, about a month after they started. The Palestinians refused to return to direct negotiations until a new freeze was in place. It's their land. It doesn't belong to the Israelis. It's Palestinian land, but that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The Israeli settlers come in, armed to the teeth, start ripping up olive orchards and trees and fig trees and destroying everything in sight that belongs to Palestinians and building their settlements. And apparently there is no power on earth is going to stop them. There is no power on earth that is going to stop the Israelis from their apartheid actions against the Palestinians. This has a very familiar ring. I'm sure the Jews of Europe felt the same way in the 1930s. What a shame. What a shame. These two U.S. officials who refused to allow themselves to be identified said American pressure for a three-month moratorium and the U.S. incentives package, which included political, diplomatic, and security assurances for Israel, are now all off the table. This leaves Obama with failure after failure, not only failures domestically, but the Afghan war, failure. The increasing friction with China, failure. The deluge of these cables released by WikiLeaks points out not just Obama's failures, of course, although it does show 2 years of his failures, but failure, failure, failure. You know, I'll say it again, Obama ought to have his Lyndon Johnson moment and just call a press conference tomorrow and tell the world that this is it for him. He has 2 years left and he's not running for re-election, and then start showing some leadership. It's not going to happen, though. It's not going to happen. So the Palestinians, once again, are abandoned to whatever the Likudniks in Israel want to put on them. And nobody, once again, after 60 years, nobody will come to the defense of the Palestinians. Just like 90 years ago, 80 years ago, nobody would come to the defense of the Jews of Europe. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Being sponsored by John Starr, who messages in, love your show, thanks for being the voice of sanity on the air. John Starr, this hour's sponsor. Thank you, John, very much. Chris, I guess it's Chris, sent me an email. Subject line is Second Thoughts. Chris writes, I was spitting mad at Obama yesterday. Today, after hearing him narrate what he did and how and why, suddenly my gut reminded me that I would sell my soul to the devil to save the lives of those I love. And suddenly I see the unemployed, the sick and broken poor who need support and rescue. And it was bought by letting the filthy, ugly, selfish, rich bastards and bitches have their new yachts. Is there any other way to save the masses of the poor? You know, I think about that too, and were there no other way to negotiate, if there was no other way out, I think the president would have been remiss to not stand up for people who desperately need the assistance right now. But I don't think that's the point here. I think the point is Obama didn't have to do this. He didn't have to do it. He didn't have to cave in. John Boehner said back in October that given no other choices, in other words, if Obama would have said, look, goddammit, here's the way it's going to be. Anyone who makes over $250,000 a year as an individual or $500,000 a year as a couple, and then Chuck Schumer says, okay, let's go up to $1 million. Anyone who makes $1 million down will continue to get the tax cut. Anyone who makes $1 million over, your goddamn decade-long free ride is over. But Obama didn't do that. And these filthy, scum-sucking Republicans who are now just, I don't know, they all look like they just came from some kind of a sex orgy, you know, with that self-satisfied sneer and grin, especially that suntanned pig. And Obama didn't have to do it. That's the problem. It's not that Obama went to bat for people who really need the help. You know, good on him for doing that. But he's not going to get any credit for it. You see, the Republicans and this piece of dreck, Beck and the rest of these bastards will spin this so incredibly that Obama's not going to get credit for anything. And what he agreed to was a 2-year extension. 2-year temporary extension, just like the 10-year temporary extension. Let's not make the tax cuts permanent. That would have required all the machinations of the House and the Senate. But the people filling Bush's head with his little fantasies were able to convince him, no, just make it 10 years and then they have to be renewed or not, and dump it 10 years down the road. Well, 10 years went by real damn fast, didn't it? 2 years? 2 years is going to be an eye blink. And it'll be an election year, and like I mentioned the other night, then what Obama did was hand the Republicans their issue for the 2012. And that's why they're all walking around with that smirky, schmecky look on their faces, these Republican so-called leaders. They have their campaign issue now. They don't need Sarah Palin. They don't need, these far-right freak kooks that the Republicans don't want anything to do with. They have their issue now. And 2 years from now, it'll be the same thing. Barack Obama's trying to raise your taxes. We're trying not to. And Obama will collapse again. I just wish that there was a progressive Democrat, a real liberal someplace, who would challenge him from the left. Is there anything we can do about your printer? Every time you print something off, it wreaks havoc on the video stream's audio. Really? I'm sorry, Malachi. There's not a damn thing I can do about it. I'm sorry. You don't understand the operation we have down here. We don't work in a radio station. We don't work for the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization. We don't work for ABC. I don't work for Premier Broadcasting. Nobody pays us a salary. Nobody buys our equipment, and nobody makes sure that our printer doesn't make noise on the Ustream when I use it. Sorry. And I really am. I'm not trying to be a smartass with you. I'm sorry. But we have, I got an email from somebody today that said, will you please stop clearing your throat? You know, I mute the button here. But if you're listening online, you'll still hear it. And, you know, I just want to say to people who say that to me, you know, get a goddamn life. Leave me alone. You know, stop asking me stuff like that. You know, if you don't like it, tune out. I really don't care. We don't, you know, just go away. But just, I'm not in a good mood. Will you stop clearing your throat? Bite me. Let's go down the list. Murder, mass murder of innocents, torture, support of regimes like the Likudniks, who also do torture and mass murder. Why do they hate us? Let's add now child molesting. How about that? WikiLeaks cables show the Afghan interior minister, Hanif Atmar, was in a panic over a scandal involving foreign contractors employed to train Afghan policemen who took drugs and paid for young, quote, dancing boys, end quote, to entertain them in northern Afghanistan. And it caused such a panic that the interior minister, Hanif Atmar, a corrupt son of a bitch like everybody in that government is, the interior minister begged the U.S. embassy to try and quash the story. According to one of the U.S. Embassy cables released by WikiLeaks, in a meeting with the assistant U.S. ambassador, a panicked Hanif Atmar, the interior minister at the time of the episode last June, warned that the information about this would, quote, endanger lives, end quote, and was particularly concerned that a video of the incident might be made public. The episode helped to fuel Afghan demands that private contractors and private security companies be brought under much tighter government control. However, the U.S. Embassy was legally incapable of honoring a request by Atmar that the U.S. military should assume authority over training centers managed by DynCorp, the U.S. company whose employees were involved in the incident in the northern province of Kunduz. The U.S. government, the military, and the U.S. State Department are legally incapable of stopping Well, look what happened with Blackwater. The charges of murder against those filthy sons of bitches, all the charges dropped. All the charges gone. There is a long tradition. John Boone, writing The Guardian in the UK, writes, there's a long tradition of young boys dressing up as girls and dancing for men in Afghanistan, an activity that sometimes crosses the line into child abuse, with Afghans keeping boys as possessions. Now, I came across a story similar to this several months ago, and just decided it was ridiculous for me to talk about the cultural mores of the people who live in a place I've never been to. And the story was about, I think it was in the Washington Post, or maybe one of the UK newspapers, but it was about a tradition, a custom, whatever you want to call it, that is a very long-lived custom in that part of the world, of older men assuming authority and patronage over young boys, pre-adolescent boys. In some instances, according to the article, from what I could get, sex was part of the deal. And the tribal, and this is, I'm not talking about homosexuality, I'm talking about pedophilia. Kind of like what the Catholic priests do at any goddamn time they want to. Well, apparently, you know, in so many cultures, whether it's the Catholic Church culture or several I've read, various and sundry cultures in the Middle East, and now this in the Far East, these cultures have, as part of their structure, these relationships between older men and pre-adolescent boys. But I didn't get into the story. But now I am into it, because U.S. contractors, you see, DynCorp and God knows who else, according to the WikiLeaks, huge international, or at least internal, incident in Afghanistan, that these American contractors sent over there to train people how to murder and torture, how to be police officers, how to handle crowd control. You've seen some of the videos of these clowns, these Afghan clowns hopping around like bugs, you know, holding guns that, you know. Am I being a cultural imperialist right now? Hell yeah. I don't give a rat's ass about these men in Afghanistan. I wish we would get out. That's not cultural imperialism. That's just saying, you know, screw you and your cultural crap that doesn't compute for me. Go away. Let me get out of your country. That's all I want. Let me out. But now we have Americans doing it.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
10 before the hour, and once again, the answer of this hour. Come on, Mike. This hour is sponsored by John Starr, who sends a message. Love your show. Thanks for being a voice of sanity on the air. And is signed John Starr. John, thank you very much. John Starr is a sponsor this hour. Two more sponsors coming up, the second and third hours of the program tonight. I want to repeat this because I understand from our satellite uplink people that the first 5 minutes of our program tonight was lost somewhere in the ether. This is December 7th. It is the 69th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. In that attack, 2,400 American military and some civilians, I'm not sure the number, were killed. It was an act of aggression and an act of war. Whatever its justification was to the Japanese, whatever the provocation was in their minds, it was an act of war, and it immediately led us into war. 4 years later, on August 6th and then again on August 9th, 1945, we launched unnecessary and gratuitous nuclear attacks against the Japanese mainland that killed 100 times as many people immediately, a total of 250,000 in the initial bomb blasts, and I don't think anyone is quite aware of how many people died subsequent because of radiation poisoning. As far as I'm concerned, both acts were grievous acts of war, murder, slaughter. I realize that the victors always get to write history, but as an American, over all these years, once I became conscious of what being an American really meant, I just find it a little bit difficult to deal with the fact that the attack on Pearl Harbor is commemorated as a day that will live in infamy, as FDR put it, and the unnecessary, and I'm not going to argue that point. If you want to argue it, go find somebody to argue it with. The unnecessary thermonuclear or nuclear attack on Japan that killed 250,000 people outright. Both were acts of war and aggression and insanity. Both were perpetrated by governments with very little respect for human life. But bring up the American nuclear attacks on Japan in the context of an act of murder and mayhem that was unnecessary. And immediately the super patriots in this country, like I'm sure the super patriots left in Japan, will probably try to justify their attack on Pearl Harbor. But the super patriots in this country will try to justify the incineration of 250,000 people who had the misfortune of simply being Japanese citizens. So these days to commemorate acts of war have always been difficult for me. Big time anniversary coming up next year of the beginning of the U.S. Civil War right over here in Charleston, South Carolina. And the rednecks here in the South are just getting gooey in their attempts to rewrite the history here in the southern part of the United States. So it's not just an external problem. We do it internally, too. But I just wanted to make that that statement because I hear a lot of commentary on December 7th, usually, about the Japanese attack on one of our territories. And I hear very little on August 6th and practically nothing on August 9th about our 100 times more grievous response against the Japanese mainland on a civilian population. That's all. Is there equivalency in acts of war? Of course not. You know, if 1,100 Palestinians or Gazans are killed and 6 Israeli soldiers are killed, you know, who decides about that? You know, who says, who makes the statement that the deaths of this group are more important than the deaths of this group? These people suffered more than these people, or this group had more justification for slaughtering members of that group. I got off the track here. The WikiLeaks cables release shows that American private contractors who are being sent to Afghanistan ostensibly to train their police department to murder, torture, and otherwise suppress and oppress their own people. We have a history of doing this, you know. Ask anybody who knows about School of the Americas. Those contractors now, according to these releases, have been involved in something they had no business being involved in. And that was what are referred to as dancing boys. They pay for young boys to entertain them, which is a cultural aspect in Afghanistan, I guess. I've never been there. But for Americans to participate in this, and according to the U.S. State Department, according to these cables that WikiLeaks released, the U.S. State Department and the U.S. military said there was nothing they could do to stop these private contractors from doing this. You want to know why they hate us? To murder and torture and child molestation. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program, and this hour is sponsored by Carl Howard. Carl Howard. He sent a message. It says, somehow, my unemployment benefits went through and backdated several weeks to boot. My own needs are few, and I want to share this almost unlikely victory with the last real thinking people in America, Mike's Truth Seekers. Well, that's very nice. That's very nice. Yeah, when you appeal the state refuses to pay your unemployment, you keep filing. We've been through that. You keep filing, and if the appeal is in your favor, all of a sudden you get a big check. Well, good for you, Carl, and thanks for sharing. Carl Howard, this hour's sponsor. I'm on the email list of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security because I like to get their press releases. And for whatever other reason, I don't know, maybe they find this program interesting. But this one came yesterday from the press office, U.S. Department of Homeland Security. This is for real. This is not an Andy Borowitz report. DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano today announced the expansion of the department's national If You See Something, Say Something campaign to hundreds of Walmart stores across the country, launching a new partnership between Department of Homeland Security and Walmart to help the American public play an active role in ensuring the safety and security of our nation. What in the hell? You ever gone to those sites that show the pictures of the Walmart shoppers? Huh? Is that some funny stuff? Oh, my God. So now Department of Homeland Security and Walmart. Secretary Napolitano said, quote, Homeland Security starts with hometown security. Jesus Christ Almighty, we are in the era of Big Brother, the East German Stasi, the old Soviet NKVD, the CIA. Here we are. Keep a close watch on your neighbor. Secretary Napolitano said, I applaud Walmart for joining the If You See Something, Say Something campaign. This partnership will help millions of shoppers across the nation identify and report indicators of terrorism, crime, and other threats to law enforcement authorities. Report it to law enforcement authorities. Indicators of terrorism. Can you imagine some of these brain-dead bastards that go into Walmart? Hey, look over there. Is that an Arab boar behind the paints? We don't need no paint. No, I said paints. You know what I wear on my ass. Paints. Is that an Arab over there? God damn, look at him sneaking around back there. Get on your cell phone. Jesus, God. The If You See Something, Say Something campaign, originally implemented by New York City's Metropolitan Transportation Authority and funded in part by $13 million from DHS's Transit Security Grant Program, is a simple and effective program to engage the public and key frontline employees, that would be Walmart people, to identify and report indicators of terrorism, crime, and other threats to the proper transportation and law enforcement authorities. What the hell is she talking? Does a subway run through Walmart now? I mean, is there a goddamn bus stop inside Walmart? More than 230 Walmart stores nationwide launched the If You See Something, Say Something campaign yesterday, with a total of 588 Walmart stores in 27 states joining in the coming weeks. A short video message available here, and there's a link, will play at select checkout locations to remind shoppers that Big Brother is watching you, and you must prepare yourself for the 2 minutes of hate that may come up while you are checking out, wherein we flash the picture of Osama bin Laden up on the screen, and everybody will come to attention. Put your bags down! And sneer and hiss. Over the past 5 months, Department of Homeland Security has worked with its federal, state, and local and private sector partners, as well as the Department of Justice, to expand the If You See Something, Say Something campaign to communities throughout the country, including the recent statewide expansions of the If You See Something, Say Something campaign across Minnesota and New Jersey. Partners now include the Mall of America, the American Hotel and Lodging Association, Amtrak, the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, sports and general aviation industries, and state and local fusion centers across the country. What is a fusion center? Does that have anything to do with bombs? In the coming months, the department will continue to expand the If You See Something, Say Something campaign nationally with public education materials and outreach tools designed to help America's businesses, communities, and citizens remain vigilant and play an active role in keeping this miserable goddamn country safe. Oh, I added that last part. Walmart. The Mall of America. The American Hotel and Lodging Association, which I find that to be really hysterically funny, because the American Hotel and Lodging Association, it's been my experience, I don't know if this is true or not, but so much of that industry is run by foreign nationals. South Asians, that would be Hindus, Indians, or Indian Muslims, Indian Hindus, people of Arab extraction, Indian extraction, Afghan extraction. So they have all signed on to the Department of Homeland Security. Amtrak. Sports industries. What does that mean? When I mean, when the Falcons are in a huddle now, you know we're 10-2 this year. When the Falcons are in a huddle, they're going to get down there and say, okay, wing right, 56 right on three. But did you see that guy sitting up there in the eighth row, midfield? You see him? You see him, boys? Get on the talk back and tell the coach to send security over there. That guy looks like an Arab. No, he looks like a Jew. No, actually, he looks like a Catholic. No, he looks Irish. No, I don't think so. He looks like he's from Venezuela. Just report the son of a bitch, will you please? Break! Walmart. If you see something, say something. Oh, there's a lot to see in Walmart. Oh, my God. What a freak show. What a complete ass freak show. I mean, you've been to those websites. You've been to those Walmart photo. You know, you take a photo and you send it in. And it, the if you see something, say something campaign. I mean, that can only be parody of the people who really go there. If you see something, say something with the freaks that go in there. Oh, well, we'll be right back.
Coast to Coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Well, some abuse, but not the kind of substance abuse that the pig man Limbaugh gets involved in. This hour is sponsored by Carl Howard, who includes with his sponsorship the message, somehow my unemployment benefits went through and backdated several weeks to boot. My own needs are few, and I want to share this almost unlikely victory with the last real thinking people in America, Mike's Truth Seekers. Thanks, Carl Howard. Julian Assange. I may have to give you the first part of this now and the second part after the break. He writes, I grew up in a Queensland country town in Australia where people spoke their minds bluntly. They distrusted big government as something that could be corrupted if not watched carefully. The dark days of corruption in the Queensland government before the Fitzgerald inquiry are testimony to what happens when the politicians gag the media from reporting the truth. These things have stayed with me. WikiLeaks was created around these core values. The idea, conceived in Australia, was to use internet technologies in new ways to report the truth. WikiLeaks coined a new type of journalism, scientific journalism. We work with other media outlets to bring people the news, but also to prove it is true. Scientific journalism allows you to read a news story, then to click online to see the original document it is based on. That way you can judge for yourself. Is the story true? Did the journalist report it accurately? Democratic societies need a strong media, and WikiLeaks is part of that media. The media helps keep government honest. WikiLeaks has revealed some hard truths about the Iraq and Afghan wars and broken stories about corporate corruption. People have said I am anti-war. For the record, I am not. Sometimes nations need to go to war, and there are just wars. But there is nothing more wrong than a government lying to its people about those wars, than asking these same citizens to put their lives and their taxes on the line for those lies. If a war is justified, then tell the truth. and the people will decide whether to support it. If you have read any of the Afghan or Iraq war logs, any of the U.S. Embassy cables, or any of the stories about the things WikiLeaks has reported, consider how important it is for all media to be able to report these things freely. WikiLeaks is not the only publisher of the U.S. Embassy cables. Other media outlets, including Britain's The Guardian, The New York Times, El País in Spain, and Der Spiegel in Germany, have published the same redacted cables. Yet it is WikiLeaks, as the coordinator of these other groups, that has copped the most vicious attacks and accusations from the U.S. government and its acolytes. I have been accused of treason, even though I am an Australian, not a U.S. citizen. There have been dozens of serious calls in the United States for me to be, quote, taken out, end quote, by U.S. special forces. Sarah Palin says I should be, quote, hunted down like Osama bin Laden, end quote. A Republican bill sits before the United States Senate seeking to have me declared a, quote, transnational threat, end quote, and disposed of accordingly. An advisor to the Canadian Prime Minister's office has called on national television for me to be assassinated. An American blogger has called for my 20-year-old son here in Australia to be kidnapped and harmed for no other reason than to get at me. And Australians should observe with no pride the disgraceful pandering to these sentiments by Prime Minister Gillard and U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have not had a word of criticism for the other media organizations. That is because The Guardian, The New York Times, and Der Spiegel are old and large, while WikiLeaks is as yet young and small. We are the underdogs. The Gillard government is trying to shoot the messenger because it doesn't want the truth revealed, including information about its own diplomatic and political dealings. Has there been any response from the Australian government to the numerous public threats of violence against me and other WikiLeaks personnel? One might have thought an Australian prime minister would be defending her citizens against such things, but there have been only wholly unsubstantiated claims of illegality. The Prime Minister and especially the Attorney General of Australia are meant to carry out their duties with dignity and above the fray. Rest assured, these two mean to save their own skins. They will not. Every time WikiLeaks publishes the truth about abuses committed by U.S. agencies, Australian politicians chant a provably false chorus with the State Department. To wit, you'll risk lives, national security, you'll endanger troops. Then they say there is nothing of importance in what WikiLeaks publishes. It can't be both. Which is it? We'll finish this up when we come back. This is an open letter that Julian Assange wrote for the Australian newspaper in Australia, and it was published in that country today, a copy of which is obviously circulating around the web. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, continuing and concluding this op-ed piece written by Julian Assange and for the Australian. It was published in that country today. The only place I've seen it is online, wherein he He points out that the title is, quote, "The Truth Will Always Win," end quote. He goes on, "Every time WikiLeaks publishes the truth about abuses committed by U.S. agencies, Australian politicians chant a provably false chorus with the State Department, which is, quote, "You'll risk lives, national security, you'll endanger troops," end quote. Then they say there's nothing of importance in what WikiLeaks publishes. It can't be both. Which is it? It is neither. WikiLeaks has a 4-year publishing history. During that time, we have changed whole governments, but not a single person, as far as anyone is aware, has been harmed. But the U.S., with Australian government connivance, has killed thousands in just the past few months alone. U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates admitted in a letter to the U.S. Congress that no sensitive intelligence sources or methods have been compromised by the Afghan war logs disclosure. The Pentagon stated there was no evidence that WikiLeaks reports had led to anyone being harmed in Afghanistan. NATO in Kabul told CNN it couldn't find a single person who needed protecting. The Australian Department of Defense said the same. No Australian troops or sources have been hurt by anything we have published. But our publications have been far from unimportant. The U.S. diplomatic cables reveal some startling facts. Here are a couple. The U.S. asked its diplomats to steal personal human material and information from U.N. officials and human rights groups, including DNA, fingerprints, iris scans, credit card numbers, internet passwords, ID photos, all in violation of international treaties. Presumably, Australian U.S. UN diplomats may be targeted too. Also, King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia asked the U.S. office in Jordan and Bahrain that Saudi Arabia wanted Iran's nuclear program stopped by any means available. Britain's Iran inquiry was fixed to protect, quote, U.S. interests, end quote. Sweden is a covert member of NATO, and U.S. intelligence sharing is kept from Parliament. The U.S. is playing hardball to get other countries to take freed detainees from Guantanamo. Barack Obama agreed to meet the Slovenian president only if Slovenia took a prisoner. Our Pacific neighbor, Kiribati, was offered millions of dollars to accept detainees. In its landmark ruling in the Pentagon Papers case, the U.S. Supreme Court said, quote, "Only a free and unrestrained press can effectively expose deception in government," end quote. The swirling storm around WikiLeaks today reinforces the need to defend the right of all media to reveal the truth. Julian Assange. Now, as you probably also know, he turned himself in to British authorities today. And after having an extraordinarily high bond guaranteed by several of his followers, his supporters, including film director Ken Loach and veteran war journalist John Pilger, they offered to guarantee Assange bail of $150,000, but the judge refused bail and ordered Assange held in prison until December 14th on the grounds that he might fail to surrender for his next court appearance, and he had the financial means to flee Britain. Well, for Christ's sake, he turned himself in. He now faces alleged sex crime charges in Sweden, and he told the court he intends to fight moves to extradite him to that country. Assange was asked by the judge, Howard Riddle, in the London court, whether he understood that he could consent to be extradited to Sweden, where he faces one count of rape, which, if you were listening the other night, we defined the Swedish version of rape. "I'm not making light of sexual assault." I'll get back to that in a second. One count of unlawful coercion and two counts of sexual molestation. Assange denies all of the charges, and he responded about he could consent to be extradited to Sweden. He said, I understand that, and I do not consent. Assange's major sources of funding have slowly dried up since his organization began releasing hundreds of U.S. diplomatic cables. 9 days ago, the Visa Europe credit card company has suspended transfers to WikiLeaks, pending further investigation, quote, quote, into the nature of its business and whether it contravenes Visa operating rules. That's all quote from Visa. Swiss authorities yesterday froze Assange's bank account, reported to contain about $41,000. The Swiss, who will provide secrecy and sanctuary to any multi-billion con man on earth. But here you have Assange, 41 grand, and the Swiss froze his bank account after claiming he had provided false personal information. MasterCard blocked transfers to WikiLeaks yesterday, saying the organization was involved in illegal activity. And online credit firm PayPal has refused to pass on donations to the site. Well, that makes some interesting targets for the hackers who have threatened massive retaliation if this were to occur. I'm not talking about the thermonuclear release of information that would probably bring down several governments, maybe even ours. Speaking outside the court, Mark Stevens, Assange's British lawyer, said that, quote, a renewed bail application will be made, end quote. Attorney Stevens added that the judge had requested to see the Swedish prosecutor's evidence, which has still not been seen by the WikiLeaks founder's defense team. His lawyer said, many people believe Assange to be innocent, myself included. Many people believe that this prosecution is politically motivated. Now, Assange's legal woes relate to sex crime allegations filed against him this past summer by two Swedish women. Gemma Lindfield, speaking for the Swedish authorities, set out the charges in court today. She said the first complainant, Miss A, claimed she was the victim of what the Swedes call unlawful coercion on the night of August 14th in Stockholm. Assange is accused of using his body weight to hold her down in a sexual manner. Miss A also alleged that she was, quote, sexually molested, end quote, by Assange, who had sex with her without using a condom. There's the rape charge. When it was her express wish that one should be used. The third charge claims Assange, quote, deliberately molested, end quote, Miss A on August 18th, quote, in a way designed to violate her sexual integrity, end quote. Finally, Assange is accused of having sex with a second woman, Miss W, on August 17th, without a condom. The WikiLeaks founder has admitted having consensual sex with the women. His attorney told the BBC this weekend that he was worried the attempt to extradite his client to Sweden could be a precursor to moving him to the United States. Quote from the attorney, it doesn't escape my attention that Sweden was one of those lickspittle states which used its resources and its facilities for rendition flights by the U.S. to transport terrorism suspects around the world for interrogation, he said. However, Sweden is rejecting claims that it is seeking Assange's extradition on political grounds. Swedish prosecutor Marianne Nye told Agence France-Presse this weekend, quote, this investigation has proceeded perfectly normally without any political pressure of any kind. It is completely independent, end quote. Assange and his lawyers have questioned that independence, noting that Sweden's chief prosecutor dropped the charges in September. The case, however, was resurrected, the attorney claimed, only, quote, after the intervention of a Swedish politician, end quote. Assange's biggest worry right now are the Swedish allegations, but he could also face legal challenges from governments troubled by WikiLeaks' recent release of diplomatic papers. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder told reporters on Monday he had authorized, quote, a number of things to be done, end quote, to combat WikiLeaks activities. Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard has said her administration is investigating. And on. If the open government activist, Assange, is jailed, he's in jail, or if any harm comes to him, the encryption code to this monster file, what is it, 1.5 gigabytes, will be released, unleashing a flood of damaging documents. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. And the hour is sponsored by Carl Howard. Yay, Carl. A message that comes with a sponsorship. Somehow, my unemployment benefits went through and backdated several weeks to boot. My own needs are few. And I want to share this almost unlikely victory with the last real thinking people in America, Mike's Truth Seekers. It's very kind, and thank you, Carl. I do appreciate it. Bernie Sanders is threatening a filibuster. He is an independent. He's really a socialist. Bless his heart. He is threatening to filibuster the agreement in the Senate, calling it bad politics and bad policy. Of all the details in this package that Barack Obama was in such a cowardly way accepted, the most galling to liberals seemed to be the compromise to extend the tax cuts for the highest earners, which many Democrats fought when the cuts passed Congress in 2001 and 2003. And have railed against ever since. The Democrats had also badly wanted to make permanent the tax cuts for middle and lower income workers, which was not included in the deal. The estate tax, which expired in 2009, would be temporarily set at 35% with a $5 million exemption. You know what the details are. But Bernie Sanders said in an interview on MSNBC, quote, I think for a Democratic president, a Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate to be following the Bush economic philosophy of tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires is absolutely wrong public policy and absolutely wrong politically. I've got to tell you, I will do whatever I can to see that 60 votes are not acquired to pass this piece of legislation, end quote. And on the House side, Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, said that he, too, would do whatever he could to stop the compromise from passing in this lame duck session. Conyers said, after the president made his cowardly, defeated announcement, Conyers said, quote, this is a fight for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party and the nation. I can tell you with certainty that legislative blackmail of this kind by the Republicans will be vehemently opposed by many, if not most, Democrats, progressives, and some Republicans who are concerned with the country's financial budget. Representative Conyers, I want some of what you're smoking when you say some Republicans will vehemently oppose this. Please, come on. Representative Peter Welch, a Democrat of Vermont, circulated a letter urging House Democrats to oppose the deal, calling it fiscally irresponsible and grossly unfair. Representative Welch wrote, quote, we support extending tax cuts in full to 98% of American taxpayers, as the president initially proposed. He should not back down, nor should we, end quote. And then, of course, they're going to send Joe Biden to Capitol Hill to try to convince his former colleagues that Obama won the best compromise possible from emboldened Republicans. I mean, this is just disgusting. I mean, it's one thing to realize that a politician is a compromiser when a stiff backbone is needed, but it's something else again to realize that the president and the head of your party will do anything to accommodate the most unreasonable sons of bitches in Congress in order to follow his own personal philosophy of get along, go along. He still thinks, I don't know, what does he do with his good friends, his body man, what's the guy's name? When they sit around and have a cup of coffee at the end of the day or a glass of wine or a cigarette, whatever they do, what does Obama say? Boy, I really broke it off in those goddamn Republicans' ass today, didn't I? Does he say that? Does he say, well, I got a really good deal from those Republican sons of bitches? Does he say that? What does he say? Does he say, I wonder how history is going to treat me since I'm giving everyone in this country the appearance that I'm terrified of Republicans. I'm not going to stand up for what I believe in. I'm going to allow them to push me around. I'm going to lose the base of my own party. So now Bernie Sanders is threatening a filibuster. Whenever the Republicans threatened a filibuster over the past 2 years, the Democrats all ran to the cloakroom and peed their pants and then stopped whatever they were doing. They're threatening a filibuster. Oh, quick, throw the bill in the garbage. Forget it. Never mind. What do they want? Give it to them. Give it to them. Do you suppose the Republicans are going to do that now that Bernie Sanders, who's not a Democrat, he's an independent, he's got an I after his name, but he votes with the Democratic caucus. Do you think the Republicans are now going to run to the Republican cloakroom and urinate all over themselves and say, okay, we give up. No, we were just kidding, Mr. President. We were just kidding. Which is what the Democrats have been doing for 2 years. It must be infectious because now Obama's doing it. It's one thing, like I said, to realize that you're being betrayed by politicians. Yawn, water's wet, the sun also rises, you know. But to find out that the man who has the power, he has the office, he has the backing to do the right thing politically and then refuses, that's not a president. That's not a president I would ever vote for again under any circumstances. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I think we'll take some phone calls. If you want to get online now, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. the hour. This is the Malloy Show. This hour is sponsored by Bob Alexander of superbeans.com and also a heavy-duty contributor to this program. He writes, "Hey, Truth Seekers, it's been a pretty good run, almost 16 years, but the curtain's coming down on superbeans.com on New Year's Eve. Until then, it's free shipping for orders of 5 pounds or more of gourmet Super Beans coffee. It's my way of saying goodbye with a goodbye." Bob is folding his tent. So, Bob Alexander is the sponsor of this hour's program. That's how we met him, through Super Beans. It was 3 or 4 years ago. I got an email where he said, "Hey, I have this little company, and we do coffee from Hawaii, and I'll send you." He sent me the email. I think he sent Randy Rhodes' email. He sent it to several people. I think we were the only ones that responded. And I wrote back and said, yeah. And, oh, my God. I mean, it ruined me. It ruined you, too. Getting Super Beans coffee absolutely ruined us. The only thing that is close to this stuff is when we go to International Farmers Market locally here now. they have coffee from all over the world, but Jamaican. What's the other one that we like a lot? Well, no, I don't mean his Hawaiian coffee. I mean other Kenyan coffee is good. There's a South American coffee that we no, that's Central America, Costa Rican. Anyway, Bob Alexander, go to his website, superbeans.com, because he is he's making some very serious adjustments, I guess is the way to put it. And Super Beans is going out of business. We're going to come to your calls here in just a second. Give me just a minute, because there's one other thing I want to toss in here. This is from the New Orleans Times-Picayune newspaper today. Navy Secretary Ray Mabus, who also is Obama's point man on the Gulf Coast oil spill recovery. Mabus is pressing America's armed services to consume as much Gulf seafood as possible. Navy Captain Becky Brenton said yesterday that Mabus has talked with Secretary of Defense Robert Gates and the Secretaries of the Air Force and the Army, and his staff has talked to the Defense Commissary Agency, which operates a worldwide chain of stores for military personnel, making the point that, quote, "We should be buying Gulf Coast seafood," end quote. The Louisiana Board of the Louisiana Marketing Board is getting $30 million from BP to spend over the next 3 years to promote Gulf seafood. The Louisiana Board also will be getting a share of the $15 million the Commerce Department has given to the Gulf State Marine Fisheries Commission. Now, of course, nobody, as the Times-Picayune puts it, the still unanswerable question is the long-term effect of the oil spilled and the dispersants used to break it up, effects that might not show up for years. There is that little problem, isn't there? The little problem, Yul Smith, Executive Director of the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board, said, "We don't know that answer. What effects the spilled oil and the dispersants might have on human consumption." I'm adding the human consumption. He just said, "We don't know what the effects might the effects might not show up for years. Well, of course, he's talking about human consumption. He said, we don't know the answer, and I don't think there's a scientist that could give you a definite answer. So now the U.S. military is being used in another experiment, and that is to find out what the long-term effects of eating this food will be now. Smith said that while unprecedented levels of testing of seafood post-spill have proved its safety, quote, I think we're going to have to test for a long time to constantly reassure the consumer that the seafood is safe, end quote. Well, eat this fish! What are you going to do, right? Your military chain of command has said it's time for you boys and girls to be eating Gulf seafood. We think it's safe. We hope it's safe. We may not know for 30 or 40 years, but by then your ass will be dead anyway, so what difference does it make? Yeah, we know it won't stick to the pan, that's for damn sure. Sanchez is in East L.A. ¿Cómo está, Sanchez?
Senor Malloy, it's a coincidence that you're talking about that BP Gulf Shrimps, because I just came back from an on-air audition for the first ever BP Kitchens, their brand-new products concerning all the Gulf oil spills here. From the BP Kitchens comes the brand-new taste sensation, Chef BP's pre-oiled Gulf Shrimp. Just drop them in the pan and listen to them sizzle.
Listen to them sizzle. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I feel very badly for the fisher folk or anyone related to that industry in the Louisiana Gulf Coast or Mississippi Gulf Coast or Texas Gulf Coast. But
yeah.
Alabama Gulf Coast. But that's, you know, it is totally the fault of BP and the regulatory agencies that were gutted in this country by the Bush crime family. And
right.
So, yeah, the fisher folk are going to suffer. The people mm-hmm. who eat this crap may suffer. Nobody knows. But the industry and the government are willing to use the U.S. military as an experimental target audience
and
see what happens.
Also, because I saw some video footage a few months back about this very same topic, that the government, as far as like food safety departments, are willing to look the other way even when they're called. I saw some of the most lethargic crabs being dumped out on like a table, you know, where they put the ice and they separate the good from the bad crabs.
Mm-hmm.
They were all lethargic and oily. They had the sheen on them. And, you know, they called several times to see if they could get people down to investigate the stuff, and nobody would come down to look at this stuff. So, yeah, I really feel for the people down there, man.
Well, about the only place that, and I'll probably get sick from eating this, but the only place I eat seafood from, fish. I don't eat treif. I don't eat garbage food like shrimp and lobsters and those horrible sea spiders. I just don't eat them. But fish, Alaska, what's his name in Alaska who sent us the, Kelly sent us, he's the producer for Shannon Moore's program, radio program in Alaska, and he sent us salmon and cod, halibut, that is some of the, I'm going to put you on hold and come back,
cool.
Sanchez, I'll be right back. That's some of the best fish I've ever had in my life. We had some more of that salmon the other day. Unbelievable. And Norwegian, you know, from the North Sea, where they have all the oil wells up there, too. But, I mean, what are you going to do, right? Nothing that's ever fish farmed anywhere. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And anything that comes from China is potentially full of death.
is the outrage? Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 21 past the hour. We're talking with, we have an open line here, 877-996-2556. Come on, I don't take calls that often, so jump in here. Sanchez, all right, where were you?
Oh, yeah, well, before we dropped off on that weird BP tangent.
Oh, wait a second. Let me just say this, because I forgot.
Okay.
This hour is sponsored by Bob Alexander, who writes, Hey, Truth Seekers, has been a pretty good run, almost 16 years, but the curtain's coming down on superbeans.com on New Year's Eve. Until then, it's free shipping for orders of 5 pounds or more of gourmet Super Beans coffee. It's my way of saying goodbye with a good bye. Bob Alexander, this hour's sponsor. Go to his website, superbeans.com. Order some coffee. All right.
Well, thank you to Bob and to all the other sponsors of your program for allowing us all to come on and express our views and opinions here, because, quite frankly, you're one of the few and far between that are left that are going to be able to tell it to us like it really is.
Yeah, I mean, we really do appreciate all of our sponsors. That's what Kathy and I were talking about during the break, how rigid some of them can be, but, you know, we love them all. We just love them all. Yeah.
Oh, thank you to them all. And especially in the month of December here, I want to wish you and Kathy and Molly and all the listeners the best and finest artificially seasoned greetings. But seriously, I really wanted to call and talk about the Obama bailouts to the rich again.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, the thing that has got me most upset, and the thing I would like to do my synchronized screaming with you about, would be the loss of the potential tax revenue that would have been generated, according to rough estimates I've seen in a lot of different articles. They're betting around the figure of $700 billion. I mean, and a couple of weeks ago, when Obama was down in dealing with Hu Jintao of China, and mysteriously on that very same day, we had a rocket that was launched off the west coast of Los Angeles here.
Mm-hmm.
But the figure that was being batted around by Hu Jintao that we owe the Chinese alone is $800 billion. So that could have gone a long way just to settle that one debt. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, Mike, I think you know that we owe the Japanese about $785 billion.
Well, I know between the two Asian tigers, although the Japanese are having a hell of a time here for the past decade because of the mess they got into, but between Japan and China, I don't know who else holds debt. I know the Saudis hold a lot of American debt. I don't know who else does, but we don't have I had a friend that said, you know, we don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of right now.
Right, and especially after last week's little incident which occurred between China and and Russia, where they've now abandoned the American currency as their currency of trade. They're now trading between themselves. I understand it. I'm doing a lot of reading between Paul Krugman and Chris Hedges.
Chris Hedges, I missed that about not doing the American dollar. I'll have to ask.
Well, there was an incident which occurred roughly about a week ago. And the Chinese and Russians are now trading, I believe it's oil revenues, amongst themselves in their own currencies. They've abandoned the dollar as the currency of trade. So if, for example, the Saudis decide to do that, senor, we're like stewed. We're really screwed in this matter. I mean, we've already got the Federal Reserve doing their little hanky-panky that was going on as well. But my real concern here is the incredible amount of deficit that we owe these people and what it's going to do to the American dollar. And once that happens, who's going to pick up the slack? It's going to be the poor and the middle class. Can you try to even guess where we're going to get $700 billion to generate this much a revenue? I can't.
No, well, of course not. But as you were pointing out, it shows the absolute duplicity and lies of these filthy Republicans. They're no more interested in cutting the deficit than peeing up a rope. That's
right.
Not what they're about. You know, this is a joke. But, you know, all of a sudden, that seems to be the grease that lubricated the rails that got these bastards into office. I'm just looking forward to the chaos that's going to occur in this country over the next 2 years and hoping that the American people will understand that it's time to, A, destroy the Republican Party because it's a terrorist organization. B, get rid of 90% of the Democratic Party because it's an ineffective a clutch of cowards. And C, move this country away from as much as we can before the power settles over us. Move this country away from capitalism and into social democracy or democratic socialism, and try to reestablish ourselves as a country that can take care of our own.
Yeah. Well, I'll have you know, upon listening to many of the other programs today on the radio dial, many of the progressive hosts were trying to make excuses for Barack Obama, but many of the callers, I'm telling you, man, the natives are getting restless. This seems to be the only inevitable way to take care of something like this, because obviously they're trying to put down both the poor and the middle class. They don't really give a damn. They're the ones making the money. They're the ones who are going to have everything once the dollar crashes and our economy comes to a complete stop. So,
that's true. Hey, I got to leave it there. Sanchez?
Okay, man.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Take care, okay?
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Bob Alexander. Bob Alexander at superbeans.com. Sends a message. It's been a pretty good run, almost 16 years, but the curtain's coming down on superbeans.com on New Year's Eve. Until then, it's free shipping for orders of 5 pounds or more of gourmet Super Beans coffee. It's my way of saying goodbye with a good buy. Get it? Good B-Y-E with a good B-Y. Okay. Bob Alexander. Thanks, Bob. Go to his website, superbeans.com. Buy something. Please? We have one open line, 877-996-2556. Casey is in Chicago. Hello, Casey. Hey, Casey.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Mike, okay, I'm a little nervous. I don't really call in, but first of all, Bob Alexander, my wife and I, we are contributors to a site, and actually I sent them an email that says if he does anything kind on the side, please let us know or restart, because he does have a fantastic product.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, it's good coffee. Great coffee.
Okay, here, I heard about 2-3 segments ago, here's what ticks me off. There's no cussing, nothing, but I am angry, and I don't usually call like this. This whole thing with passing the tax cuts, I'm a person that's on unemployment, but in a nutshell, I've been a union electrician 25 years, same shop for 20 years, it went down, shifted around with a couple of jobs, been laying on my butt now over 8 months. A year and 2 months. I'm on that cusp where they were going to cut off the unemployment. I hate that they had to make this deal, but to some degree, I kind of need it. I have four kids, and
Casey, wait a minute. I understand that, and I think everybody out there who believes in justice and fairness understands that. The point I was trying to make, That unemployment extension, if Obama would have been a real leader and really would have kicked these Republicans' ass, he would have gotten it anyway. I mean, he didn't have to give away the store in order to provide tax breaks for the working people in this country and an extension of unemployment benefits. He didn't have to do it the way he did it. Somebody sent me an email, and I don't know the answer. Let me just toss it out there. Bush got these tax cuts passed using this technique called reconciliation, where all they needed was simple majority, I think. And my question is, why can't the Democrats do that now and just end this nonsense? In other words, end the tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy and continue them for the not-wealthy, people like you, people like me, people that are struggling to hold on. I don't understand that. I wish Prairie 2 would send me an email and explain it to me, because I don't get it.
Mike, applause to you for that, because I'll tell you what angered me was watching Channel 7 News today, and Obama came out after already a couple years in office, and he's put this finger out there and going, now you guys are going to come at me? I'm going to come at you now. What are you waiting for? How long did it take you to? You had the majority in the first couple of years of your presidency, and now you're going to start coming at them?
Yeah.
What the heck is wrong with you, man? Now you're going to sit there and put your foot down?
I know.
And now you leave people like us out in limbo here. And almost like here, Republicans, it's like toast. We get the crust, and the Republicans get the little meat with the butter in the middle of it, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
Mike, I love your show. Been listening to you since 06, since I got the series here. Lost you on LS 890 a few years back.
Yeah.
Great to find you again. And you know what? I'm a subscriber to your podcast. Sorry, I'm nervous, all that stuff. Keep it going. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Casey. I appreciate the fact that you're a podcast subscriber. That is what keeps us going. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. WLS days. Oh, my God. That seems like a million years ago. Channel 7 was right on the floor above us, WLS television. WLS radio. Boy, what a nest of right-wing reactionaries I walked into when I went to work there. Oh, my God. But it was fun. We had a great audience and a bunch of nuts. You get the idea that Chicago, with all its diversity, with all its wonderful labor history, its history of social progress, that you know the right wing half asses would be few and far between. Not true. There were so many geeks and jerks in Chicago who used to harass the hell out of me and the program and the station. I mean, it was okay. Nothing different from what goes on now, but. I always had a different opinion of Chicago radio audiences. I should have known better. All radio audiences are skewed to the right because that's the only thing that's been available. I just had this wonderful time being able to hang out with Studs Terkel, for God's sake. I have some memories of Chicago, like Casey. And Casey's voice sounds familiar, too. I'm sure he called me when I was on WLS. We had a lot of fun in Chicago, didn't we? It was too cold to live there. They have two seasons in Chicago, August and winter. But I miss it, the Windy City. It was just an absolutely great city. And ever since I left, under weird circumstances, all those years ago, we have tried and tried and tried to get back into the Chicago market and can't do it. It's astonishing to me, just astonishing. It is a blue-collar, working-class city. And, I've got a program that appeals to that audience, and we are absolutely blocked by every single station in that market. It's incredible. It's just incredible. This happens so many times. You know, a lot of these right-wing half-wits who I used to read some of their emails. I don't bother anymore. But, oh, how many stations are you on? Rush Limbaugh's on 800. You know, like that made some kind of difference. When you're on Sirius and XM, you're on, you have blanket coverage over the entire North America anyway, and South America, I guess, parts of South America. I mean, Hernan listens to us in Argentina, doesn't he? Chicago. It's a great city. I loved Chicago. Blue is calling from Johannesburg. Well, there you are.
Yeah, good day, Mike.
Hey, what about your boy, Julian?
Well, I'm sitting here drinking a toast to Julian Assange in some good South African coffee.
Yeah?
And I was thinking about the whole question of heroism and courage and contemporary heroes. And Cherie and I went the other night and saw a film about Pat Tillman, the football star,
mm-hmm, right,
who was obviously murdered by his own government because he was about to talk about what was really going on,
mm-hmm,
in Afghanistan from the point of view of a soldier. And I was thinking about this bloke, Brad Manning,
mm-hmm,
who gave the video of the American swine murdering the innocent civilians and so on from their helicopter like it was a bloody video game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about Julian Assange, and the only thing I wonder about is how are his trousers large enough to walk around with them? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm, sure. Sure.
This guy's got more guts in his little finger.
Why is the Prime Minister of Australia, who I thought was more of a liberal than your last one, she's calling for his, I don't know, jailing or
yeah.
Everybody, and it's not just the United States and Australia. The Brits are doing it. The Israelis are the only ones that seem to be saying, for all the wrong reasons, as far as I'm concerned, that these cables validate their point of view where it concerns the Middle East. But when you take a look at all the thugs and criminals that occupy positions of prime minister or president or el presidente all over the world, as released by these indicated by these cables, you wonder, is there anybody left who's governing his or her country
that is a decent
human being?
I was thinking about that as well this morning, because I was contrasting a black man who was president of his country, a man with genuine integrity and genuine courage. I'm talking about Mandela, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Mm-hmm.
Contrasting him with the that swine that, you know, runs your country,
mm-hmm.
who's abandoned
You really piss off a lot of American Democrats and liberals when you talk about them. Hold on a second. Let me put you on hold, and I'll come back. We got to do this break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Toe to toe. Touch and go, give a cheer, get your souvenir. People running around in circles, don't know what they're headed for. Everybody's crying peace on earth, just as soon as we win this war. Straight
by Bob Alexander at superbeans.com. He sends a message. Hey, Truth Seekers, it's been a pretty good run, almost 16 years, but the curtain's coming down on Super Beans on New Year's Eve. Until then, it's free shipping for orders of 5 pounds or more of gourmet Super Beans coffee. It's my way of saying goodbye with a goodbye. Superbeans.com. You ought to check it out. I hope you do anyway. All right, we're talking with Blue, who is in Johannesburg, South Africa. Yeah, like I was saying, you really piss off some American liberals with calling
oil. Well, I bloody hope so, Mike, because as far as I'm concerned, most American liberals are a bunch of willfully self-deluding cowards. So I'm not at all upset about pissing them off. That's what they need. They need to be taken and shaken by the shoulders very hard. But no, you're right. Your point was well taken. All of these world leaders, including Julia Gillard and Netanyahu and all the rest of them, they're all swine. And we've got to stop playing games with it. We've got to call them what they are.
Did you read the letter that Assange had published in The Australian today, the op-ed piece? If you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
I haven't seen it.
I read it on the air, and it makes the absolute perfectly salient point about what he does and why. He calls it scientific journalism. It's journalism, but when an article is published quoting somebody, scientific journalism then provides the document from which the quote is determined so that you can see immediately whether or not the person is telling the truth. And it's a new term. I never heard it before. Scientific journalism, where the truth comes out immediately. And I think what he is doing is good. I'm afraid they're going to kill him, though.
Well, I think you're right. He's a very brave guy. And there are half a dozen others, you know, that we know of, you know, people like Cy Hirsch and Greg Palast and some of the others that I've heard, and you might include yourself in that company
well,
as
no,
well.
Well, no, those guys are good journalists, but I think what Assange has done or is doing, and especially with this, what do you want to call it, this bomb that he has planted in case something happens to him, it has a 256 number key. That nobody can figure out, but he sent it. What is it, Kathy? 1.5 gigabytes of material that names, places, events, things. And if anything happens to him, it's my understanding that there are several thousand people that have this file, and it will be released spontaneously. If anything in coordination. From all these people, because they'll be sent the code if anything happens to Assange. And I think what he has done here is just absolutely, completely, totally brilliant. And what we were talking about last night, this is the beginning of real, genuine cyber warfare. This is how it's going to be fought.
Yeah, he is brilliant. He's very courageous. It's only a pity that there aren't other examples, you know, many more other examples of that sort of thing going on. I know that there are people behind the scenes that are doing what they can, but the supine submission, for example, of the people of the United States, it really outrages me and others all around the world. As I've said so many times when I've called in, what goes on in your country sooner or later, and usually sooner, affects all the rest of us, and in a very direct way. So, it's infuriating when I heard today. Are you still there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When I heard today about the so-called backroom deal about the unemployment and the taxes and all the rest of it, it doesn't affect me directly, not as yet anyway. But I know people in your country who will be directly affected by it, and it's outrageous. I mean, this guy has no courage at all. If you look back at the campaign when he disowned his best friend Jeremiah Wright. After agreeing with everything the guy said about America, and then the moment he drew flak from it, he walked away from the guy's church and disowned him as a friend. That's the act of a coward.
Right, absolutely. There's no question. No question. I don't understand what has happened certainly not with Obama, except for the fact, and I've said this before, there was a lot of self-delusion, myself included, in this country, up to a point. I mean, I'm not a fool, and I've been around long enough that, you know, I was advocating against Obama's election, but I didn't like Hillary Clinton either for basically the same reasons. They're corporatists. But I had no idea it would be this bad. I don't
want to sound superior or anything, but there were a lot of us in the rest of the world who were onto this guy from the beginning.
Well, there are a lot of people here who are onto him. I'm not saying I wasn't onto him. I had his entire record, everything he'd ever voted on when he was in the Illinois legislature and when he was a U.S. senator. The evidence was there. But what got me, and it did get me, I'm a sucker for rhetoric. I'm a sucker for the kind of rhetoric that is inspiring, and it was inspiring. You know, that speech he gave from Cairo was unbelievable. The speech he gave at the Brandenburg Gate, I believe it was, in Berlin, or wherever the hell he was. I mean,
well, that means he did a good job of reading Orwell and digesting it. Yeah.
Well, okay, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, and certainly it is for me, but, you know, the rhetoric that the guy was capable of putting out there was just, it got me, and it got a lot of Americans. It really did get us, and I think a lot of us are coming out of the ether, some of us more quickly than others, but I think...
Hey, by the way, to change the subject just briefly, I was talking to Kath earlier. You guys have got to see the two sequels to that Swedish film, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, we've only seen the first. I want to see the other two.
It was
astonishingly good movie. Got to go, Blue. Thanks.
All right.
All right. Take care. Appreciate you checking in. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey guys.